O God, you are our God. Earnestly we seek you. Our souls thirst for you. Our bodies long for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. And Jesus answers, if you knew the generosity of God and who I am, you would be asking me for a drink, and I would be giving you fresh, living water. I am a stranger in a strange land this morning. I work at Gull Lake Camp. We serve kids all the time. I wear outfits that look nothing like what I'm wearing today. I actually, last night, I was very particular about what I was wearing because my grandmother is here, and she cares about such things. So I made sure my shirt was the right shirt and my tie was the right shirt, and I was quite concerned. I'm not sure I actually got it right. And now I'm covered in this. It's quite an interesting thing. I'm quite a, like I said, stranger in a strange land. I have no wise words. I'm just a guy. And maybe this covering here will protect you from me. And I mean that. Maybe you and I would hear from something greater. A God who would speak mysteriously and miraculously through me. I've heard he can speak through donkeys. I'm sure I'm not that much of a challenge. But I'm just a thirsty guy. Keith Churchill, who asked me to speak here this morning, when I started at Gull Lake, he was the area minister. And so he was the guy who had to make sure that the programs I offered to kids were okay. And Keith backed me into a corner a few times, concerned about the way things were happening. He wanted to make sure that I both had support and direction. And then, as I understand, he's done now. And so one week after he leaves, he asked me to come and speak. He can't even fix the mess that I create here this morning among you people. I'll do my best. I think we have something in common. I think we live in a dry and weary land where there is no water. And I believe that if we knew the generosity of God and who it is who asks us for a drink, we would ask him. And he would give us fresh, living water. As Mario Bolding says, all our love, our stretching out, our hope, our thirst, God is creating in us so that God may fill us. God is on the inside of our longing. In Canada, we gather around things we hold in common on the outside. That's what we do. Even the idea of youth ministry, it's sort of that you are the same age, you're as crazy, we'll put you together. And then we'll have a seniors thing. And then we'll have the people who like to do potlucks, and we'll make sure they're together. We'll gather people who like church offered to them in this sort of tradition. It's things we hold important on the outside. And then God put inside of us something that we hold in common, all of us, this thirst, an insatiable thirst. And if you are like me, you try to quench this thirst in all kinds of ways. And what we long for is satisfaction from God. I want to share a bit of my story. I've got a thirsty soul in the wildest of ways, I suppose. If I look back on my life, I could see that I've tried to quench this in some very ineffective ways. Just for a quick science lesson, the body needs water. This metaphor is also scientific. We lose a cup of water just by breathing in a day. If we didn't drink for a few days, we would die. If we parch ourselves even slightly, we suffer from headaches, constipation. We have body functions that will shut down. That we're made to intake water, each one of us. You can live without food for several weeks, they say. I've never tried this, by the way. But water, no. No, you'd die much quicker without water. Simple water. I have chased water, this thirst, tried to quench this thirst in my life by at times chasing mirages. Things that from afar look very, very good. But as I near them, I end up that I take a scoop of them into my life, and all I end up with is sand in my mouth. Simple mirages. Things such as power, prejudice, extending adolescence, sexual promiscuity, popularity. These things, as I was young, I chased with vigor, and I ended up with nothing more than sand in my mouth. I also tried to quench this thirst with diuretics. Diuretics are simply things that, though include water, end up leaving your body more thirsty after the fact. The coffee, perfect example. In fact, this morning I had a lot of coffee and had to make sure that I organized myself to relieve the water that was going out of my body quicker than it was coming in. My body was not intended to be quenched by diuretics. And as an adult, I think I've chased metaphorical mirage or diuretics. Things like religiosity, the appearance of holiness, normally approved sins like greed and apathy and gossip, and even the chasing of status and the approval of people like you. Each gives the appearance of thirst quenching, and all doing little more than to make me thirstier and thirstier each time I sip. In the end, my soul longs for living water and is simply never satisfied with mirages or diuretics. It wants living water. It was created to have it. I come to you as thirsty. I'm a parched beggar, and I think I may have found the well. I wonder if the story of the woman in the well, which I'm sorry I made you read that long. That was long. That's a lot of scripture. And I assure you, if we had just read that twice and asked me not to come up, you'd have all been richer for it, quite frankly. It's a great story. It's a powerful story of transformation. Jesus and his disciples, they leave Judea and they head for Galilee. And the quickest way is to go through Samaria. But nobody goes through Samaria. No good Jew would ever travel through Samaria. It's the land of half-breeds. People who have intermarried. Jesus, though, because it's the quickest way, and it's a long wander through the desert, they go directly through Samaria. Jesus always moves through the land of the places he should stay clear from. Tired from the journey, Jesus sits down at the city's well, and the disciples leave to get some food. He's traveled with these men for some time, and my guess is that as they were leaving, he was relieved to just sit at a well in the middle of nowhere. And along comes this woman who's come to draw water in the heat of the day. He asks her for a drink. He offers her living water, tells her how he knows her and knows that she has no husband. And they talk about worship and where to worship. And he reveals that he is the Messiah to this woman. This is a first, by the way. He reveals that he is the Messiah. The disciples return, and the woman quickly leaves. Who is she, this woman? She's a woman of mixed race. And like I said, Jews would have avoided her like the plague. They'd been intermarrying the Samaritans for over 400 years. She is also a hider. She's a hider. The natural practice of a community in the middle of the desert would have been to have the women go in the morning and in the evening to the well, under the cover of cool and dark. Probably not that dark, but cool. This is the desert we're talking about. Nobody does anything in the middle of the day in the desert. And here she is, hiding from those who also traveled to this well, and she happens upon this Jesus. She is also a public sinner. A woman without a husband would have been known, especially one with five previous husbands. You have to understand, she's come from a small town in the middle of the desert. And these women at the well in the morning, they talk about her. You know that girl. She's been getting around five different husbands. Some of the women who would have gone to the well in the evening would have been former wives of the men she was with. She was known. She wasn't hiding out of convenience. She was hiding to miss the eyes and glares of these other women who knew her and knew her sin. This isn't just, I think sometimes we lose things. Water comes to us so easily. I mean, we can buy it bottled, we can buy it in 3 different sizes, 50 different companies. We lose the fact that this woman would have died had she not come to the well. That this community was gathering around the well because they had no other place to go. There was no option. And today, the way we live with our backyards, largely, we can sin in ways nobody ever knows about. We can sin in ways alone in the dark, connected with the outside world, without even interacting with people. And I want you to hear that that wasn't the case then. They knew her. They knew her story. And they weren't pleased with her. And nobody was checking in on her why she didn't come to the well in the morning. So to these women around her, she was as good as dead. Who cares if she gets her water? She can go someplace else. No, she'll just go in the middle of the day and get her water. But she is not stupid, this woman. She is theologically aware. She gets into a great discussion about theology and the Jews and the history and the well and how this all comes together. This woman is religiously wise. She knows the ways. She knows history and scriptures better than I do. And she gets into quite a debate, perhaps with the wrong character. Let's link our story with her story. I think that's the point. When you read scripture, you have to read yourself into it. Where are you in this story? Where am I? Who is this woman in our society? Can you imagine her? I mean, obviously we don't gather at the town well. Where do we gather? Who is missing? Who is not allowed there? Maybe even let's boil it down to this. We have empty seats here. Who's missing? Who doesn't fit here? Who are the public sinners, the hiders, the theologically aware, but the wildly disconnected? In what way are you like her? Now picture yourself. Let's travel from the town down to this well, to the outskirts of town. What does it feel like? You happen upon this man. What are you and I holding on to religiously, sinfully, longingly, that can only be transformed at the well? Well, what's her need? Let's think of her for a moment. She is a Samaritan. She's just thirsty. She has no choice. She, like us, was created with an insatiable thirst in our souls. We were created by God who placed the thirst in us, which is unfair. The only place to get this soul thirst quenched is from a creator. She's like us, the same. She's trying to quench this thirst poorly and creatively with diuretics. The diuretics of the man she is with right now, who the more she has, the thirstier she is. She also tries to quench this thirst with the sand of religious knowledge, as if knowing about a Messiah is enough to encounter a Messiah. And she's, of course, hiding behind the mirage of being disconnected from her world. I don't imagine she ever, at the end of 6 or 7 trips in the middle of isolation, ever thinks she's figured it out and been satisfied. And what does Jesus offer this woman? He offers her a well, a deep well, through which water is forced upward under the pressure of the earth. This well is full. It is fresh. And chock-a-block to the top of living water. Life-giving, eternal water. It gushes into a fountain. And he talks about it like it's an artesian well forced out of the earth. This is the desert. This is not a drinking fountain. This is something so magical, mysterious, powerful that's hiding underneath her feet that gushes forth to eternal life in the middle of the sand. It doesn't belong there. He then tells her that he knows her. I think there's nothing more powerful than being known for who we are fully. You know, if somebody knows the full darkness of who we are and can celebrate alongside us in the light that we are, there's a lot to us. And that he tells her he accepts her and is willing to talk to her about matters of greatest importance. Imagine in a moment or two, around going from the well to life-giving, you know, talking about the deepest sin in her life. I'd imagine she probably went, "Okay, like, I just came to get some water." No. He engages her so differently. He offers her honesty through her deception. He calls her bluff and takes all the power of sin away from this woman. Because he carries on the conversation after he knows who she really is. And he offers her, therefore, freedom from sin. To a Jew, this is an amazing story. Here is the Son of God, tired and weary from a journey, fully divine, fully human. Right there, tired from a journey, thirsty. Here is the holiest of men, listening with understanding to a very sorry story. That isn't supposed to happen. Jesus, we know, as the story goes on, was not supposed to be with this woman. Any woman, but a Samaritan? A half-breed? Come on. This is the rabbi. He's supposed to be protected from such women. And here he is, engaging her. He breaks all the barriers of nationality, orthodox custom. Here is the beginning of the universality of the gospel. Jesus reveals to a non-Jew that he is the Messiah. Here's God so loving the world, not in theory, but in action. Story tells us a lot. I like it that it tells us about his contrarian style, that Jesus would do something different that we don't anticipate. I try to make sure it all makes sense to me, but it's not so for him. And what is her response after he engages her across all this cultural divide and everything that shouldn't be happening? He's called her bluff. If somebody sat you down and said, "I know what you've been doing. I know the whole story." Yeah, but that one too. Every little bit of it. Her response is so different than mine would be. She engages this man. But then when the disciples return and make it awkward, the cultural faux pas, in the confusion, she drops her jar and leaves. In the confusion, she drops her jar. She came thirsty. She came for one reason to this well, to fill this jar, which she probably didn't have 30 jars. She had a jar. And in the confusion, she leaves the well, having not been satisfied the way she intended to come. She quickly leaves. My guess is it's a symbolic act of her not needing it anymore, metaphorically. Maybe it's a symbolic thing of her hurry, because we hear how things happen, as I'll tell you what comes next. And then the symbolic of her certain return. Why carry this empty thing back? I'm full. I'm going back to tell everybody. I'll come back to the well. But I've got to tell everyone what just happened. She goes back to her village and tells the people about her encounter. This is a hider. This is the one who's avoiding everybody around her. And all of a sudden, she becomes this evangelist. She tells everybody her story, the one she met. She's transformed in one conversation. She gathers everybody in her world and tells them. And they are moved. They're moved to action. They come back, and they beg Jesus to stay. And in the end, they say, we don't just believe because you said the story. Now we believe because we experienced it ourselves. But this woman, the one sleeping around with all these men, tangled life of sin, hiding under the cover of the middle of the day, tells everyone a story, and it transforms them. Powerful. Why is this story important? In response to our stretching out, our hope, our thirst. What we do, what you do as a church, it's important. You and I, and you as a church, sit on the edge of the well. Jesus has sort of said, take my seat. Sit where the people will come. And tell them my story when they arrive. Don't tell them the religious part. Speak right into their heart, who they really are, the worst and best of them. Speak across every cultural line you can consider and tell them the truth about the way things are. They were made thirsty for me, he said. Tell them. Sit at the town well. I cannot think of a more strategic position for a church to be than to be at the center of the greatest wealth and greatest poverty in a city. You sit as bridge builders. I don't know how far you drive and how untouched you are by the location that you're currently in, but this is powerful. There's something beyond for being here. Most churches would love to trade you spaces. They can't afford to be here. They have to build in suburbs and hope communities come to them. You live at the apex of a community who longs for God, the rich, the poor, and all spaces in between. You are the only voice in this dry and weary land. That's incredible. And you have something different to tell. You have a way. You've got a language that is quite something. I get to go to all these different Canadian Baptist churches all across. And I don't know if you know many of them, but they're different than you. I've never been sung in by a choir. It's quite powerful. I was moved. I thought it was all going to be pomp and circumstance, and I found myself having a hard time sort of keeping it together, following these people. There are people who are thirsty for that. The only way they will understand what you have to say is as you sing it. And as you live in the midst of weakness, you have a foundation here. It's quite something. I found out this morning that there are rules, there's systems, there's a double-sided system, which I actually may yet get wrong. But it's powerful. Do you know you have no pastor? You have a leadership transition. I know some of the people who've worked here. Old mentors, old friends, they've been here. And you still are here, carrying some torch to a people, providing light. Some well-sitters you are. People are thirsty. Rely on this foundation in the midst of a difficult time. It's obvious this morning that people have jumped into gaps that they previously didn't know they had to sit in. Stay committed to it. You're going to have to find another pastor. For some of you, that's just got to be the most tiring thought in your mind. Carry on. People are thirsty. They live in a dry and weary land where there's no water, only concrete. And you own the well. You share the good news, and it offers people living water, people that might be desperately trying to fill that longing with all kinds of diuretics. I see them all around. I grew up here. I know there's diuretics and mirages available to all without cost. And who knows, once one person hears of this living water, they too may drop their bucket and run to tell the waiting world that they may have found the well, the one, the Messiah has come. And he's alive and well among you. Captivated and quenched by the Messiah. We must realize as a people that our chasing after mirages is over and our diuretic drinking is finished. We are to see Christ sitting on the edge of the well, recognizing our thirst, and sit with him as he shares this with the world waiting. Oh God, you are our God. Earnestly we seek you. Our souls long for you. In a dry and weary land where there is no water. And Jesus answers, if you knew the generosity of God and who I am, you would be asking me for a drink, and I would give you fresh living water.